Another frequent contributor to Gunsmoke was Marion Clark. Again, Norman MacDonald.
Marion Clark wrote some 65 to 70 Gunsmokes, and interestingly enough, one of two women that was terribly successful in the Western field. I met Marion Clark through Kathleen Height, who had taken Marion under her wing in a way. Marion was confined to a wheelchair and not able to get around, but Kathleen had told me a great deal about her during the time that Kathy and I worked on other shows together, like Romance and Rogers of the Gazette and so on. She felt that it would be good therapy if Marion could do a script, and I thought this would be fine. And Marion not only did one script, she did some 69 or 70 more, because she was had a marvelous insight into the woman's side of the Western idiom. There were several things that were almost a trademark with Marion, and strangely enough, one of them was the sort of sad, wistful tragedy of people moving west and bringing their most treasured belongings with them. And one script in particular of Marion's, I think, exemplifies this. It was in July or August of 1958. It was called The Piano, and it's a great example of Marion's work.
Some more pie, Kitty? You might as well, since Doc's paying for it.
No, thanks, Matt. I've had plenty.
Yeah, what happened to make you such a big spender, Doc? Some forgotten relative leave you something in his will?
Might as well,
Well, what do you mean, Doc?
Well, you remember that cowboy got himself shot up in a Long Branch brawl? Oh, that was a year or two ago?
There's been more than one of them.
I know that, but Kitty might remember this. She helped stop the bleeding until I got there.
Oh, I remember, Doc. He didn't even have enough money to buy a beer.
And we figured he never would have.
Well, what happened to him?
Well, sir, I had a letter from him this morning. He's had some kind of a payoff in California. And he sent me a $20 gold piece to pay me for what he called my medical services.
Wow.
Well, that's fine, Doc. I'm glad he made out.
Yes, men like him don't often do it.
And you don't often get paid, either.
Well, you never know in my business.
Mr. Dillon. Mr. Dillon.
That's Chester, Matt, at the door.
Oh. And you too, Doc. Hurry up.
He means it, Doc. Excuse me.
Sure.
But he's gone back outside.
Somebody must be hurt.
I didn't hear any shooting.
Now, there are other ways to get hurt, Doc.
Over here by the stage, Mr. Dillon.
Oh.
Yeah, that man has been hurt, Matt.
That's the shotgun messenger, Doc. Huh?
Somebody must have held up the stage. Then.
Mike got shot, Mr. Dillon. He's hurt pretty bad.
Let me take a look.
What happened, Chester?
Well, I don't know for sure. I seen the stage come in just now, and Mike was driving.
Mike was driving?
Yes, sir, so I knew something was wrong, and then I could see he is hurt, too.
Yeah, Matt.
Yeah, Doc.
He's trying to say something. Make it fast, Matt. I got to get him up to my office.
Mike, it's Marshal Dillon. What happened?
Held up. Driver killed.
Were there any passengers?
No. Currency. Shipment. 20,000.
Where'd it happen, Mike?
He's going out, Matt.
Mike. Try. Please try. Tell me where'd it happen. How many men? Huh?
North. Hat Creek. Two men.
That's all, Matt. He's unconscious.
Yeah. I'll find a couple of men to help you, Doc. Chester, go get our horses.
Yes, sir.
And hurry.
We're along here right now, Mr. Dillon. That cracked shoe shows up real plain.
Yeah, they've been riding hard, too. But they must have slowed down or stopped for a while somewhere.
Well, I hope they didn't get no more sleep last night than we did.
What's the matter, Chester? You getting old?
No, sir, it ain't that, but my gracious, 2 hours sleep, it just don't seem worth bothering about, that's all.
Well, I hope our friends bothered a little about sleep.
Now, if I was carrying $20,000 in bills, I wouldn't never stop.
Yeah? You'd have to be riding a pretty unusual horse.
But... Well, yes, I guess you're right, but...
Wait a minute.
Hmm?
Looks like they did stop, after all.
What?
They built a fire over there.
Yeah, it was them, all right.
Yeah, same tracks. I think we picked up a little time on them, Chester. Come on, let's pick up some more.
Like they'd stuck to the saddle. They're near dark again.
They'll have to stop someplace along here pretty soon, huh?
Well, I don't know.
Hold up, sir. Those tracks are heading down to those bushes along the creek here. Let's go easy.
Yes, sir. Mr. Dillon?
Yeah.
Off yonder, above the stream there, there's a shack.
Yeah, I see it.
You think they might maybe a hit out in it?
Maybe. I'm not going to ride straight up to find out. We'll leave the horses here.
Yes, sir.
And we'll circle around back. Just keep low.
There's two horses tied up there.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Dillon, are they out?
Yeah. All right, hold it, Joe.
They're heading for the horses. You got him.
Yeah, but the other one's getting away.
Oh, he's out of range.
Chester, you go bring the horses up. I'll see about the man I shot.
Well, ain't you going after the other one?
He's got a pretty good head start, and it's near dark. I'm not going after him blind. Morning's soon enough.
All right, go on. You get my brother. You get wrecked.
Not yet. You heard bad?
Yeah. Yeah, I sure am.
Chester!
Yes, sir?
Tie up those horses and come here. We'll carry him into the shack.
Be right there.
Mr. Dillon?
Yeah.
This fellow's horse.
Well, what about him?
Well, his legs broke. He must have stumbled and he's trying to get away. You reckon I better shoot him?
All right, you can do it as soon as we get this man out of the shack.
Easy.
All right, open the door, Chester. I'll keep hold of him.
Why, it's locked. You suppose somebody lives in this forsaken place?
Oh, we'll find out. Go ahead and knock.
Anybody in there? Open up!
Anybody in there?
There's no need for any more noise at my door. Just finished telling you men you can't stay in my house.
You don't need that shotgun, ma'am. We don't mean any harm.
I intend to defend my home, sir. No rough men are going to tramp around amongst my fine things.
You open the door a little wider, ma'am, and you'll see we're not the same men.
I don't open my home to any strangers.
I'm Marshal Dillon from Dodge City, and we got a badly injured man here.
A United States Marshal?
That's right, ma'am.
Well, then I guess I'll have to let you in. But I don't hold with your Yankee government. I want that clear.
All right, ma'am, fine. Come on, Chester. Now, you just show us where you want us to put it.
He hurt bad.
Yeah, bad enough.
Well, I suppose even a rough man has a right to die in a bed. But mind you, be careful of my things.
All right, ma'am. We'll mind.
Mr.
Harry Miller's horse, Mr. Jones. I'll bring the saddle.
Ah, good.
Hey, ain't things a little strange in there?
A little?
Oh, let's talk about not hurting her fine things. There ain't nothing there that's worth carting away except maybe that old pine.
Yeah, I know.
Everything else is all cracked and broke. Why, most ladies wouldn't give that stuff house room.
You gentlemen would care to join me. I fixed a small supper.
Well, that's very nice of you, ma'am.
How'd you say it's nice?
Mr. Hanford. He's my husband. Mr. Hanford always said I could spot a gentleman right away. I could see you two were gentlemen as soon as you exchanged pleasantries there in the entryway.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
Mr. Proudfoot.
Ma'am?
Please take your hat off my cherry wood piano.
Well, ma'am, it can't hurt nothing.
I do not allow anything to mar the finish of my beautiful cherry wood piano.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Here's your plate. Please sit down.
Thank you.
I don't imagine your wounded friend will be able to partake.
No, Miss Hanford, he's not likely to come to for some time. That is, if he ever does.
I can't imagine how he got his wound. I had seen him just a few minutes before you gentlemen.
Miss Hanford, ma'am, didn't you hear the shooting right outside your door?
I have trained myself not to see and hear the ugly things of life. I just live here alone among my things.
But you said that you have a husband.
My husband has been gone for 4 years now, Marshal.
I'm sorry to hear that, ma'am.
Mr. Hanford, you'll never be content to live a quiet life. He thought he could when first we came here directly after the war. I had in mind he'd build me a new plantation. But, Marshal, just between you and me, Mr. Hanford didn't appreciate my lovely things. And one day... he just moved on west.
Oh, that's too bad, ma'am.
I do not need your pity, sir. I'm content.
Well, sure, of course.
I'd be obliged if you gentlemen would sleep out there on the veranda.
Veranda?
Oh, well, that's all right, Chester. We'll sleep on the veranda. I am going to have to keep an eye on Miller, though, ma'am.
I will watch over him, Marshal.
Well, no, that's not your job, Miss Hanford.
I'm mistress of this house, Marshal Dillon. I will watch over him. I will call you if there's any change. As a matter of fact, I'll look to him right now.
Well, all right, ma'am.
Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, Chester.
Mr. Dillon, is that slanty old porch a veranda?
Well, it is to her.
My, if she don't beat all. Dig a grave, the ground seemed harder than the last time.
Our grave digging isn't supposed to be easy, Chester. It's too permanent.
Funny how many men dies at daybreak, ain't it? I mean, when everything else is starting up and all.
Well, I guess when you have to die, it's as good a time as any.
Where do you reckon his brother is by now?
Rack? I don't know. But we're sure going to have a long ride to catch up with him.
Yeah. I sure ain't one to hurry up a man about his dying, but I sure would have been glad to have been shut of this place for now.
What's the matter, Chester? Don't you enjoy southern hospitality?
Mr. Dillon, I have to walk around in that old shack on my tiptoes. She's after me every minute about not hurting her things. Gracious goodness, I couldn't hurt them old things if I tried.
Well, we can be leaving soon now, Chester. We've done about all we can do.
Dillon, in them bushes.
Yeah. And my guns are in the house. Come on.
I believe you it's customary.
Will you get out of the way, please? I want my gun over there.
What do you suppose that crazy fool's thinking of?
I don't know, Chester, but he must have a good reason for sticking around.
His brother?
No, I don't think he'd take on these odds when he was pretty sure his brother was done for. I think he's got another reason. Where's the saddle that came off Miller's horse?
Over there in the corner?
Oh.
Be careful with your heavy footsteps.
Yeah, well, let's see now. Yeah, that's it. No wonder he stuck around.
All that money makes up into a right poor little package, don't it?
Yeah. Sir Dillon, I don't understand this sudden rudeness on your part.
I'm sorry, ma'am, but I'm not too polite when I'm being shot at. And you stay away from those windows.
I thank you not giving me orders in my own house.
Chester, let's push the piano in front of that window over there, huh? Right. We're like sitting ducks this way.
You will not touch my cherry.
All right, come on, Chester.
Oh, don't harm it. Oh, don't harm it.
All right. Now I'll watch the front and you take the side, huh? I don't think you'll wait long.
All right.
How long must I endure this? How long?
As long as that outlaw's out there, Miss Henry. He's not going to let us out of here alive.
Who's going to stay here tramping around among my nice things until he goes away?
I'm afraid so, ma'am.
Well, I'll just order him off my land.
Miss Henry, come back here!
See here, sir!
Miss Henry!
You're trespassing! I want you to ride off...
He shot her.
Yeah. Ah, there he is, running for the creek.
He's down. You got him.
Yeah. You go make sure, will you, Chester?
Yes, sir.
I'll see to Miss Hanford. Miss Hanford? Miss Hanford?
I sure did him. You were right.
I'm sorry, ma'am.
He was no gentleman, was he, Marshal? Trespass on a lady's property.
No, ma'am, he wasn't.
She's dead, Mr. Young. How's Miss Hanford?
Not good. Not good at all. Miss Hanford, we're going to take you into your house.
No, not just yet, Marshal. Don't move me. Let me die here on the veranda.
You'd be more comfortable.
Please, Marshal. I won't delay you long.
Well, is there anything we can do? I mean, is there any way to make you feel better?
If you would just see that somebody takes care of that lovely Chaywood plant.
She gone?
Yeah. Well, I can carry her inside now.
Mr. Dillon?
Yeah.
She really believed Rack Miller would listen to her and go away, didn't she?
Yeah. That he was no gentleman.
Well, it's just a shame, that's what it is. This Pine sure must play pretty. The way she loved it. Took care of it so good.
What are you doing?
Oh, I just thought I'd hit me a note or two. She wouldn't care, would she?
No, I guess she wouldn't.
Why? I don't play at all.
Huh?
And look here. Under the top. All the string is rusted away. Just hanging there. Mr. Dillon, this pine ain't made a sound for years.
Hmm. Well, I guess I didn't have to play, Chester. Just had to look pretty. Was all she had.
We'll return to the story of Gunsmoke in just one moment.
And now back to Gunsmoke.
By 1960, practically all the lifeblood had been drained out of network radio, and the handwriting seemed to be on the wall for what dramatic programs remained. CBS no longer canceled individual shows. They canceled entire program blocks. Change seemed to be the watchword. And the executives that were lowering the curtain on radio drama seemed to be of a different breed. Gone were the men with programming backgrounds. It was quite a change from the late 1940s, as Norman McDonald recalls.
It seems to me that in the old days of radio, and I'm going back again to the 40s and 50s, the executives, whether men like Guy Della Chapa or Harry Ackerman or whomever, were men with an experience in and a feeling for the theatrical end of the business as opposed to the business end of radio. There was a wonderful meeting of the minds when you went in and said you wanted to do such and such a kind of show. They could picture and understand and either agree or disagree with what you had in mind, but they knew what you were talking about. It was really extraordinarily easy to get a conference or a meeting with the then CBS brass. Usually it was one man or two men, and that one man or those two men said yes or no to your idea, and you either went with it or didn't. There was no feeling of committee and that somebody upstairs would say yes or no. I had an idea that there could be a sort of a female Gunsmoke, if you will, only modern. I went to Harry Ackerman and said that I thought if we could get Joan Fontaine to play the lead in a script I'd written, we could cut an audition record. That was in the days when we used 16-inch acetates. And it would be a thing of beauty, and everybody would be crazy about the whole thing. And, of course, it didn't work that way. Miss Fontaine did do the audition record, but it wasn't very good. My point, however, is that in the space of about a six-minute conversation in Harry Ackerman's office, I walked out with the knowledge that I could have a studio, an engineer, an orchestra, a recording session, a cast, and Miss Fontaine, all agreed to in about 5 minutes. And it takes more than that to ride up in an elevator today to one of the executive's offices.
Writer John Dunkel agrees.
I think that the decisions are made now by people who really have no training or understanding in the creative fields. They are mostly businessmen. Their only concern is economic. And the young people who move into the so-called creative spots, I don't know how they're supposed to have the understanding to do it because they have no training. They have no background at all in creative work. They don't understand writing. They don't understand directing. They don't understand anything about it. It's all economic. And this began back in those days. It began with the great importance placed upon the sales department.
John Daner summed it up this way.
Radio was deserted by its own mother and father. It was left to lie on a doorstep and wither and die. Consciously and willfully.
Gunsmoke's final broadcast was in June 1961. Parley Bear and George Walsh recall the cancellation.
I'm glad we didn't know when we were doing the last show. It would have been a terribly depressing thing to know that this was the last time. As it is, we went blithely on our way. We did the last show, and I think I was working on a Petticoat Junction when I got word that it had been taken off the air.
The last program had a line at the end that said, "This concludes the current series of Gunsmoke on CBS Radio," and I think that was the extent of it.
There were personal feelings involved, too.
We had, I think, more of ourselves put into that show than almost any other series. I know that I never felt about any other series that I did as keenly as I did about Gunsmoke or loved it as much. And the others were the same way. We loved doing what we did. We felt, and Norman allowed this feeling, that we were all a contributing factor to it in whatever facet we appeared.
Following the program's cancellation, practically everyone connected with the series went on to other lucrative areas of the entertainment industry. All have done quite well. The past 15 years has also given the Gunsmoke Company time to reflect on the ingredients that made the show a success. First, John Dunkel.
The people involved were simply excellent. It was kind of a combination that had been building all through the 40s there. We had some marvelous actors. Many of them went on to stardom. And we had good, good writers, the very best writers. Les Crutchfield and Walter Newman and Jim Poole and all kinds of people. And we had Norman at the helm, who was a very talented man. And John kind of riding herd and riding so many of them. And it was just a great combination, that's all, from the very beginning.
Norman McDonald used to say, very often, because we had a success story almost overnight, that the success of Gunsmoke was a three-way effort: the script, the actors, and the music. He was very generous in saying this because, of course, he was also a very able director, and the direction should have been thrown in there as well. I think it was an instant success because it was different. Westerns up to that time had been all pretty much the Hopalong Cassidy type thing, the Lone Ranger, more or less simple stories that appealed to youngsters of all ages. I think even today's Westerns tend to be fairly simple storylines. As they say, they're about four basic plots and you change the names. Gunsmoke came along with stories that were not necessarily the typical Western. There were emotional stories. The stories were, again, more adult, more sophisticated, more far-reaching, I suppose you might say, in so many aspects that I think the show was different. It was something that hadn't been presented to the American public before. I think that it gave the listener the benefit of a respect, possibly, that Western producers hadn't up to that time.
I think the time taken, whereas most of the radio shows were done with a sense of hurry and time, there was time to pause, to think. There was time to establish in the minds of the people, again, I can't do anything except say that radio, the magic of it is to give a visual feeling to the listener. There was time taken for that to establish a character. The writing, the writers were brilliant in that. The sound men were the greatest. They had these guys on the console, the sound were imaginative, and they were inspired. And Norman was so good. Norman had this beautiful sense of timing the show so that he was never too pressed, and you never felt pressed as an actor, so that you had to keep your eye on one eye on the booth to gauge your dramatic reading. Usually, if you had a sense of timing, the scene played as it played a press rehearsal. All I can say is it was 10 years of having a ball every Saturday morning, of not only of enjoying the drama of it, but of laughing, of humor, and of having your wits exercised a little bit.
The success of any series has to do with the charisma that the leading character has. You can give it the best stories and the best production in the world and the best support in the world, and if the guy or the gal does not have it, it isn't going to make it. And it can get by with a minimum of all of those things if whoever it is has the lead causes people to say, hey, come on, let's tune in on old so-and-so tonight. By God, I sure like to see how he's going to whip all those bad guys, you know. It's charisma, that's all, and I can't define it. I don't know what it is, what causes it, what causes the lack of it. Some people have it, some people don't, that's all. Please don't think that I'm an egomaniac. I stand back and look at this I've been on the other side for so long that I can evaluate quite clearly without being involved emotionally or ego-wise. There was great character development. God, we used to go in with 11-page scripts. Take all the time in the world to do it. And the production values of really paying attention to sound effects and playing them for what they are, and realistically. And John's contribution of taking an incident and making it a story instead of doing a full-fledged, full-blown opening, closing with a middle and contrapuntal characterizations. It was the story of a man, basically, or if it wasn't that man, then it was somebody else that man was involved with very deeply. We all really felt very strongly that we had something. And I think we all treated it very carefully.
We were lucky people. Well, we really were. This became a labor of love with everybody on the show. And I know I still have in my library a number of books dealing with that phase of United States history in and around Dodge City and western Kansas and eastern Colorado and around there. None of us could have written like John Meston did and some of the subsequent writers on there. But if there was a detail that was inaccurate or a period of time or an era that was not painted, we would all give tongue and say, no, that is not right. And we went about bringing some of our reference books in there and said, look, I'm lying. And that was, that was kind of the amazing thing when Bill was, when it made the transition from radio to television, as they described Wyatt Earp and Tilghman and some of the Clay Allison and some of the lawmen of that day, and many of the lawmen of that day and era had been former gunmen and desperados themselves, and then robbing got to be too competitive, or hijacking or road agenting became too competitive, and they quit, and these guys were good. They could control the baser element, and so some of the world's greatest outlaws became well-known for being lawmen. But you see, men in those days, and women too, were not as big as they are now. A six-foot man was a tremendously big man. And Bill had, was not as heavy then as he is now, but it was amazing how well he physically fit the descriptions of many of the old-time lawmen in there. And, Bill, I still think, is one of America's great unsung heroes so far as acting is concerned. Bill had a built-in mechanism, still does, that allows him to act with a greater reserve than he uses. I don't know if I'm making myself clear, but I know we were told in drama classes and whatnot, don't use everything you've got in every scene. Well, Bill doesn't. You feel that no matter how angry he got, how strong he was, how sad he was, how happy, how joyful, he still had 60% of his potential left. And that's an amazing thing. That he does that today on Canon, that you feel, don't push him any farther because he still has more than he's got right now. And very few actors have that. You strive all your life to acquire the ability to act with reserve. And by that I mean reserve of power. But Bill has it. And that came over so forcefully in radio that, of course, he has a voice like a pipe organ. It's a magnificent instrument. And Bill could command with his voice and had the ability to paint such pictures in his shadings and readings and whatnot. And I don't think that today Bill has ever really come into his own. As great as he is in Canon, as great as he's been in other shows that he's done, his full, potent ability has never really been unleashed.
Well, I don't know. In these days, I think they'd say the chemistry was right. In those days, I guess radio had just about come to its golden age. The mistakes and all the hard knocks were pretty well behind it, and TV had not yet made any serious inroads. So I think that the timing was one thing to be considered. And, of course, I wasn't privy to the information having to do with the selection of the four principals, Bill Conrad and Parley Bear and George Ellis and Howard McNear. But that was a masterful stroke. They certainly represented a quartet of a fine talent. And then when you put with them people like John Daner and Lawrence Dobkin and Vic Perrin and James Nusser and some of the others, it just couldn't miss. Now, this is not even getting into the area of John Meston and Norman McDonald.
Well, I think, first place, you have to go back, have to almost be imaginative, but it was fairly new, the style, the form, the approach to the Western and so on. And also, I think, because it was goddamn well done. I mean, great actors, and Norm did a hell of a job, and sound, God, what he did with sound was marvelous. And it was new, and I guess people, you never know what they're going to like. They enjoyed the characters. And you never know where it comes from. I ran into a guy who was waiting in a line somewhere recently, and my name came up, and some guy said, "Oh, you have the same name as a writer." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Did you ever hear of Meston?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, it's me." And he blew his teeth, just had a fit. And he said, "My God," he was so proud. And the guy from Chicago, and the interesting thing is that in Chicago, he said in the radio, they had a club that would meet every week or 10 days and discuss Gunsmoke and the scripts and the ideas. Which, you know, when you write something, send it in or do it, you kind of forget there's an audience out there. And these people would sit around and discuss the what had gone on. I don't know, the moral aspects or whatever. I suppose that's the one reason it was popular, I guess. But you never know how to approach them. You do what you want to do, and if you like it, somebody else likes it, and you're in luck. Otherwise, they send you down the street.
I would truly enjoy going back to the old days of being completely involved in radio. There was a marvelous feeling, which doesn't often exist anymore, marvelous feeling of going home after you finished your day's work and indeed finished your program and sitting down and saying, "Boy, I liked what happened today. I liked the show we did. I feel good about it." And being able to sit there sometimes, if it was tape delay or something, and hear your own show was a great sense of satisfaction. No committees, no groups. You, as the director, handled the music and the sound and the announcer and the cast. And you were completely involved and so were usually completely satisfied. The beauty, of course, was that the next morning you got up and started on the script for the following day or 2 days later or 5 days later, and you were starting a whole new world all over again, which you wanted to deliver in 3 days and had to be confined to 29 minutes and 30 seconds. And this, I think, was the beauty of radio. Each member of the audience, however big or however small, had a chance to exercise his own imagination and to draw his own pictures and add it to what he heard. I'd had my own private Matt Dillon, my own sexy particular Kitty, my own bumbling Doc, and my own nutty Chester, and they all did things and looked exactly the way I wanted them to look. Bill Robeson said that America may well have forgotten how to listen. And I think this might well be true. So many of us are apt to sit in front of the television set. Whether we really absorb anything or not, I don't know. We sit and we watch in radio, which has been called the theater of the mind. Your imagination worked and drew for you whatever pictures you wanted. The theater of the mind's been dark for nearly 15 years now, and I think perhaps it's time somebody turned the lights up again.
Oh, hello, Chester.
Oh, come on in, Doc.
Where's Matt?
He ain't here.
Say, where have you two been the last couple of days? I haven't seen either one of you.
Well, I just got back from Hayes City. Mr. Dillon sent me there to fetch some government papers. And you know what? I took the Santa Fe both ways,
well,
Doc.
You did? Mm. Oh, well, that beats riding. But where's Matt, you say?
He left the note, but he didn't say exactly where he was at.
Well, you mean he's out of town?
That's what the note said. It seems somebody told him where he could find Jack Brand.
Jack Brand? Well, what's he doing around here?
I don't know. I guess Missouri got too rough for him.
Why don't they handle their own outlaws instead of chasing him into Kansas for Matt to catch?
Mr. Dillon says Brand's got three of his gang with him.
You mean Matt's gone out alone after four men?
Well, if I knew where he was, I'd go help him, Doc.
Oh, well, there's nothing you can do about it, Chester.
Yeah, it worries me, though. That last holdup the gang pulled, they say four men got shot down.
Mm. Well, maybe they've quit. Maybe that's why they came to Kansas.
Well, did you ever hear of a bunch of outlaws quitting?
No, I guess not. I guess I was just talking to myself, Chester.
Chester!
Oh.
Chester!
Well, that's what you're doing, Doc.
Where is he?
Well, there he is, sitting on that wagon.
Oh, yes. Well, who's that with him?
Some fella give him a ride, I guess. Hello, Mr. Dillon.
Hello, Chester. Doc.
Hey, you lose your horse, Matt?
We left our horses out at Bauer's Ranch and borrowed this wagon. One of his riders will bring him in tomorrow.
Who's this with you, Mr. Dillon?
You've seen his picture, Chester.
Oh, my goodness. It's Jack Brand.
Let's get on, Brand. You first.
For sure. How come you let him drive the wagon, Mr. Dillon?
To keep his hands full, Chester. Here, take my shotgun and lock him up.
Yes, sir. Where's the others? I thought he had three men with him.
Well, tell him, Marshal. Tell him where they are.
They're in the wagon, Chester. Out of that canvas.
Mm-hmm. But are they all dead, Matt? All three of them?
They're all dead, Doc.
Bloodiest marshal I ever saw. It's just a wagon load of meat to him.
That's enough, Brandon.
It ain't hardly enough. I never seen such killing.
What happened, Mr. Dillon?
It doesn't matter. They put up a fight and I had to take them.
Well, I'll tell him what happened. You're a lawman here. Hid himself in the grass and just waited for us to come out of that cabin. And then he yelled, so naturally we headed for cover. Who wouldn't? He just laid there and he cut loose of the shotgun. Tore up two of the boys that way. Then he stood up and he cut down Hank Smith with a six-shooter.
How come you got out of it, Brand?
I jumped back in the cabin and I give up. We weren't putting up a fight. He spooked us yelling like that. Make any man jump.
Oh, I suppose you're trying to say that you wouldn't have shot.
We tried to shoot him. Who wouldn't? Any man's got a right to defend himself.
Oh, well, I never heard of resisting arrest called self-defense.
I never heard of no marshal shooting down everybody on the landscape.
Lock him up, Chester.
Get going, Brian.
Well, he actually think he was killing hogs, not men. Shut up and keep bloody it.
See, how come you brought the bodies back, Matt? Why didn't you just bury him out there?
I wanted more witnesses than me to identify him, Doc. Might save trouble when Brand goes to trial.
You say you were mighty lucky, taking four outlaws that way, man.
Yeah.
And you kill three out of... Oh, say, wait till people around here hear about this.
Brand's right, Doc. It's a lot of killing. An awful lot.
Oh, no, you don't. Don't get to thinking about it too much now, man. It's your job. You did it. So it's over.
It's over? Wait till tomorrow or the next day. There'll be somebody else. There's always another man to kill.
Oh, no, that's not the way to look at it, Matt. I've never heard of you shooting anybody you didn't have to.
No, I never did. But sometimes that doesn't help much.
So you look tired, Matt.
Well, I haven't slept since I rode out of here 2 days ago.
Well, now you get some rest, and you'll feel better.
Sure.
Brand snug in jail, Mr. Dillon. He don't like it much, but I told him not to try kicking his way out, that I'd be sleeping in the office.
We'll both be sleeping in the office, Chester. I'm too tired to walk to my room. Take care of this wagon. And what's in it, will you?
Mm-hmm.
You and Doc can identify those men. We'll write it out on paper in the morning.
All right, sir. I'll be coming to bed about midnight, but I'll be real quiet.
Nothing could wake me, Chester. Not tonight.
Gosh, Doc, you sure I shouldn't wake him up and tell him?
It can wait until morning, Chester. Matt's too tired to do anything about it tonight.
I guess you're right.
Of course I am.
Well, okay.
Good night, Chester.
Good night, Doc.
Gun.
Don't go for my...
No, what? Don't do it. I told you to leave the gun alone.
Okay, Mr. Dillon?
No. Don't make me kill you. Don't make me kill another man.
Mr. Dillon,
no, I've spilled enough blood. I don't want to kill you. No.
Mr. Dillon, wait.
No!
It's me, Mr. Dillon. It's Chester. There ain't nobody what? Here.
What?
You was asleep. You've been dreaming.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I like to land.
No. It's all right, Chester.
My gracious, I come in and I heard you talking and I thought somebody was here. That moonlight ain't too bright. I couldn't see good at first.
Sure.
My, I had to yell at you a couple of times before you woke up. You was dreaming you was in a fight, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was dreaming.
Nightmares like that, they're just terrible, ain't they?
There's a bottle in the desk drawer over there, Chester. Get it for me, will you?
Yes, sir, I know where it is. I used to have nightmares sometimes when I was a boy, but I don't get them much no more. Here it is, Mr. Dillon. A good stiff drink will do you good.
Thanks, Chester. What time is it?
A little past midnight.
Jack Brand awake?
No, he'd be bellerin' if he was. But, Mr. Dillon, now that you're awake, there's something I ought to tell you.
Oh, what?
Well, me and Doc was having a drink over at the Alfraganza, and a fella come in there and started talking real loud.
Talking about what?
Well, sir, mostly about how he's gonna tree dodge and how he's gonna tell you, too.
Oh?
He says he's a friend of Jack Brand's, and he's heard about how you caught him and all.
What's his name?
Stanger. Joe Stanger.
Yeah, I know him.
Well, do you think he'll cause trouble?
Probably. But I'm not going to worry about him tonight.
Yeah, no, sir, that's what me and Doc figured. He won't try nothing tonight.
All the same, keep your gun handy, Chester. Now let's try to get some sleep. Shut him up, Chester. It's hardly dawn.
I swear I'd like to throw a bucket of water on him.
Chester!
Oh, shut up, Brand. I'm coming.
I'm trying to. Come out there and cut the yelling, Ben. What's the matter with you?
Come on over here. Just unlock this cage, Chester.
What?
I'm holding a gun on you, can't you see?
Where'd you get that gun?
All right, Chester. Come on over here, I said.
Well, these ain't over there. They're in there. Hanging on the wall down here.
Well,
take your own sweet
time about it. I've been in this kid and cook long enough. Drop it, Brand.
What?
Oh. You're not hurt. I hit the gun.
I got the keys, Mr. Dillon. I'll get his gun out of there.
All right, go ahead. Stand back, Brand.
You like to bust my hand.
You're lucky.
Lucky didn't kill me, I suppose, just like you kill everybody.
Shut up.
I got it, Mr. Dillon. I ain't no good anyway. Not now.
Where'd you get that gun, Brand?
I made it, Marshal.
Don't be smart.
Oh.
Wait a minute. Joe Stanger brought it to you. He tossed it to you right through those bars on the window.
I didn't know Stanger was in town.
Didn't you?
Chester, get some boards and nail them over the window so nothing can get through it.
I'll fix it, Mr. Dillon.
Oh, wait a minute, Marshal. That's the only window in here. You can't board it up.
You'll get enough air.
No, but it'll be dark. I don't like it dark.
Don't you? When you get it fixed, we'll go to breakfast, Chester.
It won't take long, Mr. Dillon. Well, it's been some time since I've been out on the plaza this early in the morning, Mr. Dillon.
Oh, weren't you up gambling all night last Saturday, Chester?
Oh, well, that's different.
Oh, how?
Well, I've been asleep all night this time. Things look different when you had a good night's sleep.
Yeah, they sure do.
You didn't have no more nightmares last night, did you?
No, but I didn't sleep well.
Yeah, you ought to take some time off. Go out buffalo hunting or something.
Yeah, maybe I ought to take a lot of time off. Wait a minute, Chester.
What?
That's Joe Stanger coming there.
Hey, by golly, it is. What's he doing up so early?
Maybe he wants to find out why Jack Brand hasn't shot his way out of jail yet.
Well, he won't throw him no more guns. Not the way I got that place boarded up now.
Get out of the way, Chester.
Yes, sir.
Morning, Marshal.
You're up early, Stanger.
Train leaves for Abilene in about an hour.
Going to Abilene?
I'll be back next week.
Jack Brandt'll still be in jail.
I heard you caught him.
Good friend of yours, isn't he?
Sure. But I ain't part of his gang. Never was.
Yeah, I know.
Of course, there ain't much gang left now.
No.
You're a pretty rough man, Marshal.
And I have to be.
Don't it ever bother you, killing people the way you do?
Stanger, I shot a gun out of Jack Brand's hand this morning. You come by the office later and I'll give it back to you.
Now, what would I want of a smashed up six shooter?
It's yours, isn't it?
I'm wearing mine.
I ought to throw you in jail, too.
What for?
To get you out of sight, if nothing else.
I wouldn't go to jail, Marshal. Not without a fight, I wouldn't. I ain't afraid of you. You want to try it? Go ahead. Go ahead, draw.
No.
What's the matter, Marshal? I thought you liked killing men. What's holding you back? You're going to have to fight me sooner or later.
Get out of here, Stanger. Go get on your train.
Wait till I tell everybody about Matt Dillon. How he's lost his nerve.
Get out, I said.
Well, I don't want to shoot down a man that won't draw. Not today, anyway. But I'll be back, Marshal. Next week.
Why didn't you shoot him, Mr. Dillon? He's nothing but a big bluff.
Chester, you go on to breakfast. I'm going back to the office.
What? Why, you told me...
You heard me!
Well, yes, sir. Okay, Mr. Dillon. A can full of coffee, Mr. Dillon.
Thanks, Chester.
I'm going to put it right here. What you doing, writing a letter?
It's a telegram. Here, Chester, take this down to the depot, will you?
Sure.
I want it to go out right away.
U.S. War Department. What are you telegraphing Washington about?
That's my resignation, Chester.
What?
I'm quitting. Right now.
Why, you can't do that.
I've done it.
Oh, I don't believe it. You're funny.
A man can quit a job, Chester. I've quit jobs before.
Well, I know, but this is different.
What's different about it? The government doesn't own me.
But think what'll happen if you ain't marshal here.
There are other men can be marshal.
Mr. Dillon.
What?
you ain't doing this because of, well, what Joe Stanger said.
That I've lost my nerve? No, he's wrong about that. And he's wrong about my liking to kill men, too.
You never killed nobody unless you had to.
And now I don't have to. I'm through, Chester. I knew I was through when I didn't draw on Stanger this morning. I've killed my last man.
I just don't know what to say, Mr. Dillon.
I've hated this job since the day I took it. I never did have a taste for killing, and now they can find somebody who has. And he'll make a better marshal than I ever was.
That ain't true.
Go send a telegram, Chester. I'll be at Delmonico's having breakfast. And with a good appetite for a change. After breakfast, I went to my room and got some of the sleep I'd missed the night before. And I slept good. It was as though what was past, and none of it bothered me now. I didn't have to face it happening over and over again. And when I woke up, I felt better than I had in years. I even felt a little cleaner somehow. There wasn't going to be any more blood on my hands. Washington, as usual, was pretty slow answering my telegram. A week later, I still hadn't had an answer. But I didn't care. I'd quit. And that was that. I even began to enjoy myself for a change. Like the day I finally took Kitty fishing.
I got another one.
Oh. Well, throw him back, Kitty. We got more than we can carry now.
I will not throw him back. Hold still, you.
Come on over here in the shade. You've done enough fishing.
Okay. Hey, look at him, Matt. Isn't he a beauty?
Yeah. He's bigger than any I caught. Why don't you throw him in the sack and then sit down here, huh?
Say, you're right. I didn't know we'd caught that many.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have a fish fry tonight, huh?
Well, we can feed half a Dodge with all those.
Well, I doubt it. You ever see Chester go through a mess full of fish?
The last time he starved himself a couple of days in advance. Maybe we can kind of sneak up on him tonight.
No. He knows we're out here.
Maybe you ought to go into the business, Matt.
Oh? What business?
Fishing. You could do it for a living.
Well, I am going to have to find something to do for a living, I guess.
Well, it won't hurt you to loaf for a while, man.
Yeah. I'm enjoying it.
You know something, Matt?
What?
I think this is the first time I've ever seen you that you weren't wearing a gun.
It is. And I'm enjoying that, too.
Someday maybe nobody will wear guns.
Yeah, maybe. You know something, I'm sleepy.
You're lazy. So lazy you're probably going to starve to death before you find a new job.
I don't care.
Matt, look, somebody's coming on horseback.
No?
Uh-huh.
Hey. Well, that's Chester.
Oh, he's as lazy as you are. Imagine taking a horse to come this far.
Oh, Chester hates walking. Besides, he looks like he's in a hurry.
Oh, maybe he couldn't wait for that fish fry.
Mr. Dillon. Hello, Miss Kitty.
Look in that sack, Chester. We got about 30 catfish already.
Well, that's fine, Miss Kitty, but Mr. Dillon, Joe Stanger's in town.
Oh? Well, it doesn't matter to me, Chester.
But you don't understand.
Understand what?
What I come to tell you. Stanger's at the Alfraganza. A while ago he had words with one of the girls there, and she slapped him, and he pulled out his gun, and he killed her.
What?
Who was the girl, Chester?
Kate Hawkins.
Oh, No.
That's who it was, Miss Kitty. And then the bartender tried to stop him, and Stanger shot him, too. And I hear he's going to die. I grabbed a horse off the hitch rail and come right down to tell you, you've got to stop him, Mr. Dillon.
I'm not Marshal anymore here, Chester. I quit.
No, that don't matter.
It does to me.
You mean you're going to let Joe Stanger walk around Dodge and shoot everybody that gets in his way, including women?
I'm through killing. I told you that.
Who's going to stop him, then? You're the only man around here that'll go up against him, and you know it.
That may be true. But I'm still not going to do it.
Wait, Mr. Dillon. Wait a minute. I've been thinking a lot about all this lately, and there's something you've been overlooking.
Oh?
Men like Stanger and Brand, they got to be stopped. I'd do it if I could, but I can't. I ain't good enough. Most men ain't. But you are. It's kind of too bad for you that you are, but that's the way it is. And there's nothing you can do about it. Not now. It's too late. It's way too late.
Give me your gun, Chester.
Chester. Want my holster?
I'll carry it in my belt.
Oh, Kitty. Chester will help you carry the fish back.
Sure, Matt. Sure.
And directed by John Hickman and Norman McDonald, starred William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Harley Bear is Chester, Howard McNear is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. The music was composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Sound patterns by Bill James, Ray Kemper, and Tom Hanley. This is George Walsh speaking.